The accounting and finance staff of tomorrow will not just be folks who understand accounting and finance concepts, but also data concepts. So it will now or soon be important for our organizations to have some level of data knowledge, comfort, and expertise.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, and wherever else the waves take us. I'm your host for the day, Mike Gravano, recovering Cherry Coke addict and Off the Books producer. With me is Catherine Tsai.
Hello, I'm not an accountant, but I am a professional asker of questions. My drink of choice is probably a venti soy chai, and we're here today with Alex Davis. Alex, introduce yourself, please.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Big Cherry Coke fan myself. I'm the Deputy Chief Financial Officer for Pi Insurance, which is a privately held, mid-maturity, pre-IPO PNC insurance company.
Sweet.
Excellent. And we brought you here today because we'd like to talk to you about data management. So first of all, what is data management? What does that even mean?
Yeah, I think it's one of these broad terms that, depending on who you speak to, they interpret it differently. To me and to us at Pi, data management is the management of data, but from source system through how we get it and when we get it and who can get it, access and governance, and how we move it and how we store it and when we need it and what we need it for, and just kind of understanding, you know, where it's generated and what it's ultimately used for in an appropriate and controlled way to move it between the two endpoints.
How would you characterize the difference between, like, good data management versus poor?
Yeah, so I'll again kind of refer to the two endpoints with your, you know, finance and accounting and other users at this end who have certain needs and they need to get their hands on data to do their jobs. Oftentimes they're turning that data into information through the course of their work, but we don't want them to have to fight for it. We don't want them to have to wonder if it is correct, complete, accurate. Assuming we can pull off the end, good data management really revolves around the beginning. It has to be resilient to changes in source systems, right? So, you know, there's probably a lot of listeners that have had to replace a GL or a subledger or these other systems, and it's caused mass chaos in the data management in the middle. Controls need to be redesigned. The data may just structurally look different. So from more of an IT perspective, you have to redesign your tables and your queries and how you're storing it. Frequency of data. So I think it's really about being resilient and scalable. So can I plug new source systems into this end? Can I replace source systems on this end? And can I do it all without disrupting the needs and wants of my users on the opposite end?
I like how you describe that picture of what good looks like. In your new role at this new company, how much of that infrastructure was in place when you got there?
Yeah, I'll answer the infrastructure question in two ways. So Pi is a 7-year-old company that does not have legacy technology and data debt problems the way that a lot of other companies will. I came from a very large legacy PNC insurer, and we had quite the opposite problem. But Pi is very focused on data. Pi understands the value of data and uses data to drive business decisions on a daily basis. So from an enterprise data perspective, we have very good access and connectivity company-wide into our data. The issue is that that's done via a data warehouse with a visualization tool on top, and they have like a 98, I think they say, percent accuracy SLA. So it's not good enough for accounting and finance. You know, we need to be precise. So right now, we consume our data that way, and we live with the risk. We put manual detective and preventative controls and some automated controls on both sides of it, which just drives up the workload to ensure you're getting the precise product at the end for accounting entries. But we are going to be rewiring that to go direct to the source systems where we have direct control. We have the ability to archive it and store it and demonstrate for auditors that it is 100% accurate.
What are some of those source systems that you're connecting?
Sure. So obviously the general ledger, enterprise planning tool. But as an insurance company, we have policy systems. We have revenue or billing and revenue recognition subledgers that are very important. We have our claims system, our claims payment processors. And then those are kind of the, you know, the 2-minute easy version, but there's a lot of ancillary systems around that will consume information that will help us in reporting or help us explain what we're seeing in the financial results.
How is a financial reporting team better than a dad joke? A dad joke can tell you what to call a busy accounting leader, but it's not going to tell you why. Really good financial reporting teams can pull together reports that tell you what happened last month and even tell you why. They just don't always have the time to get to the why. That's where Workiva comes in. Top accounting and finance teams are using the Workiva platform to automate financial reporting, from financial statements to board reports, from 10Qs to S1s. Spend less time copying and pasting numbers and more time telling the story behind the numbers with data your auditors can trust. See why accounting and finance teams love Workiva at workiva.com/accounting. That's workiva.com/accounting. So what do you call a busy accounting leader? Overtaxed. Ugh. Why?
It's a newer company for you, right? When you got there, how much infrastructure was already there and how much heavy lifting did you have to do?
So I've only been there a couple months right now. So most of the heavy lift is still in front of us.
Sure.
But we need to rewire all the integrations that accounting and finance relies on. We get it today through a very manual and manual control rich environment, which is just a big time suck for everybody. So we believe, and what we've demonstrated so far is if we can rewire it to go source system to our trusted 100% accurate SLA data environment, that there's going to be quite a bit of work there to build it, to test it, to put the controls in place, to get our SOX guy comfortable with it, et cetera.
What kind of time frame are you looking at for doing something like that?
Yeah, start to stop, probably 18 months.
Okay.
Wow.
And we're small and nimble, right? So we don't have a lot of inertia that we have to change direction on. We can decide we want to do it today, and we can start working on it tomorrow, and I think that's why it's only 18 months.
When you say small and nimble, what constitutes small?
I think the number of decision makers, the size of the company, the different streams of data that we're talking about, right? So some large legacy insurers have multiple policy admin systems, multiple claim systems, different subledgers for revenue recognition or even AP and things like that, or AR. We're fortunate in that our business strategy was to use a system for each of those purposes, so it drastically limits the amount of integration points that we have. But there's still a good bit of work to be done to understand the data and interpret it in a way that's useful for ultimately financial reporting.
Sure.
Okay. Well, what advice would you have for somebody who might be taking on a new job at a company, whether it's a legacy company or a startup company, for what they should do in the first 30, 60, 90 days in terms of setting up good data management?
Yeah, I think you're going to spend all 90 days trying to get management buy-in that accurate, certified, and complete data is important for your organization, for your mission, for your financial reporting, right? It could be for regulatory requirements, or it could be for internal decision-making, or ideally both. But getting that management buy-in that is important and that there's going to be work to be done, unless you're walking into a perfect situation where it's been done for you. And then I think 1A is that partnership with technology. So PI has a very progressive, forward-thinking technology department who recognized, we don't want to be in the middle and getting audited. We support you, going around with your own integrations. We'll support you with it. We'll help you with it. But ultimately, there's a difference between a 98% accuracy SLA and a 100%, which we're going to require. And they recognize that. I've worked in organizations where IT has said, it's our data. We'll handle it. We'll give it to you, at the end. And that can be a big conflict, not dissimilar to a conflict where management says, I think we're doing fine with data. What are you worried about?
Yeah, I was going to ask what the biggest pushback, but because it seems like 100% accuracy is something we should all strive for, so it seems odd that there'd be people who are like, nah, we're fine.
Yeah, the best example I can give, is a fictitious insurance company that books their written premium, and now somebody wants to know how much was, pet insurance versus something else, or how much pet insurance was renewal business versus new business, right? And if you're in a situation where you're reporting by business segment, you may inherently have that information in your 100% environment. But if new versus renewal is a management reporting concept that helps us, model and predict business, that may live off elsewhere and only make it as far as the 98% data lake. And in that case, you may say, oh, we booked $100 million of pet insurance premium. I want to look at it new versus renewal, and it only totals 98.5. But 90 of it was new. It gives you the management information that you need. It lets you make an appropriate decision without hampering yourself, and you're not worried about that last 1.5% for that reason. But I need to know that 100 was the right number and not 98.5 or somewhere in between.
Sure. You said something. Can I ask a super basic question? Because I do not come from this world. But data lake versus data warehouse. What?
Yeah, I'm using them interchangeably.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Is there any last main takeaway that you want to give to listeners about data management?
Just that I think data is an incredibly valuable commodity. Most of the biggest companies in the world are recognizing that and investing in it massively. The accounting and finance staff of tomorrow will not just be folks who understand accounting and finance concepts, but also data concepts. So it will now or soon be important for our organizations to have some level of data knowledge, comfort, and expertise. And so if you don't have it, you can try to develop it, or more logically, you can hire for it as roles come up. And I have seen that skill set coming out of our gen, I don't know what we're on now, Z, whatever comes after that. So they have it, so look for it would be my advice, and plan to get comfortable with data in finance and accounting so that you can confidently meet your objectives.
Okay.
You want to ask your one-on-one question?
Yeah, real quick, for when you have one-on-ones with your team, what do you hope they bring up to you in those meetings?
This is for my team to me.
Yeah.
Okay. I like to give them the time. My calendar can be difficult to find time on, so I really try to leave it open to them for, you know, what they want to use it for. Most commonly, it results in updates on status for items that they're working on that they're giving me, which is great. Naturally, conflicts or roadblocks come out of that, and I view it as my role to help, you know, either then or shortly thereafter knock down those roadblocks so they can keep moving forward. I'm a rigid prioritizer. We all have organizations where we're overworked, and there's 20 things on the list, and I'm only going to get 5 today, so it's really important about what the 5 today are and in what order. And I like to use the time for career development conversations, so I always encourage that. Those tend to be fewer and far between, just at the discretion of the employee. But I do think that people managers have this broad power to, you know, even within the scope of, you know, my team and my responsibility, I can direct work to people that will help them accomplish their objectives if I know what their objectives are. And sometimes we can cross responsibility lines and things like that, but there's a constructive way to do it. And so I like to vet out in those conversations, what is it that you want to do? What can I help you do? Is there someone I can connect you with? Is there a piece of work that I can give you that fills a gap in your resume? And so I like to use time for that.
What do you talk about in your one-on-one with your CFO?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have a very smart and successful and CFO who's a great people manager. And so I typically have her prioritize my team's work for me just on a recurring basis. So I understand when I walk out of there, what am I going to be working on? What am I after? But most importantly, and I followed her from a prior company to this company, so I'm quite literally following a people manager who I really like and respect. We've created this space where, you know, as a CFO, deputy CFO duo, we need to be aligned. I would never challenge her, you know, on the stage in front of the company. We have an aligned vision on where we're going and what needs to be done and what's important, but naturally it doesn't start that way. So inside those one-on-ones is our, you know, kind of safe space where I can challenge her and push back. She'll change her mind when appropriate. She'll put her foot down when appropriate. But the bottom line is we leave the meeting aligned and everybody else sees that we're aligned. But we have the trust and respect inside the one-on-one where I can say, I disagree with that. I think that that should happen differently, or I'm more concerned about this than you are and here's why, or I don't think that's a concern and here's why, you know, whatever the item du jour is. So we talk about that in there a lot.
Nice. For our closing question, these are always a little zanier, a little off topic.
Let's get it.
So what data or activities in your personal life could use a little better management?
My personal finances. I would say that my personal income statement and balance sheet are the only ones that I have no plan to automate.
How is that possible?
I just need a personal instance of Workiva. So if the gods are listening, let's go.
I love it. Alex, thank you for spending some time today with us. And thank you, dear listener, both in the future and right in front of us, for surfing along with us. I'm Mike Rubagno. You heard Catherine Tsai. This has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva. Please subscribe, leave a review, tell your buddies if you like the show. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a note in the comments, or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.